Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. We're here. It's a little late, but those listening on the audio probably can't tell.
Yes, there was an insane storm that rolled through here at about 7:45 tonight, and It was thunder and lightning, and our power was flickering, and I was like, we're going to have to wait this one out, Ryan.
It's for the best. And you know, we have that small window to do like an hour show before the storm hits me, because I think it's coming my way. So like, we're storm chasers, or no, we're the opposite.
The storm's chasing us.
we're storm runner awayers.
Oh, Ryan, don't ever change.
That's the plan.
So you have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about this week because you've gotten your hands on Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing that you got your hands on. So
no.
Do you want to show our wonderful listeners your collection of shame?
It's not shameful. I'm perfectly content with my ability to spend money on plastic toys. But it's interesting. We were doing a bit of show and tell, and I know, like, for those at home who know, yes, I collect amiibo that I feel I'm not one of those people who collect in box. I think that's crazy. You're putting too much faith in our postal service. I mean, the postal service is amazing. You do great work, snow, sleet, rain, all that fun stuff, but you don't package things very well. So I take them out of the box and I play with them. What's the point in buying things if you're not going to, you know, be able to, you know, use them for what they're for? So I buy amiibo all the time. I don't bring them on the show because it was starting to get a little nuts.
I made fun of you.
We were getting emails, that too. It's just, it wasn't a safe workplace, so I didn't want to, like, continue to cause issues here. But
come on.
I'm joking. If I had a problem with people telling me why you collect those things, then I don't know. I just probably wouldn't talk about it on the show. But I do not have a problem. This is perfectly normal for many people on Reddit. So we're going to talk about amiibo. So there was a big release. They finally finished the Smash amiibo run, which was started way back in the Wii U days when the Smash came out on Wii U. And now it's finally finished, a year and a half after the last piece of DLC release. So I'm not going to show them all because there's too many. But I did want to make one quick note that, you know, we talked about Splatoon 2 coming out. And this is going to be very visual, but those at home can probably find good visual reference online. So here's one of the Smash amiibos that came out. This is Cloud. He's a guy who has a big sword. He's from Final Fantasy VII. And the quality of this guy, it looks okay in comparison to the other Smash stuff that came out early. But compare it to the same cost, the Splatoon 2 amiibos. This one right here is the squid. But just look at, like, they designed the amiibo just to be a really good amiibo and look really good. It doesn't have any of the plastic stands, so it is a squid jumping out of ink. But instead of having one of those, like, clear plastic, like, supports, this is Bayonetta, so it's got the clear plastic support there. It's just, it's all by design. Like, it's just, they've done a really good job, and they've designed the amiibo in a way that every piece has a function. So here's a little more complex one. This is the squid inkling, one of the inklings. So you can see there's like color, and there's a different color for the layers of t-shirt she has and her shoes and the ink on the ground there. It's just really cool. And I think that's why I'm mostly glad that the Smash run's over, because they're going to stop building these amiibos that are too, you know, designed in a certain, like, a certain way in a certain box to match what was designed in game, and they're designing these amiibos because they want to launch a Splatoon 2 amiibo, or I got this Pikmin one as well. I didn't even buy the game, I just have the Pikmin amiibo. So
that amiibo is really cute though.
yeah, and I'm patiently waiting for the Metroid amiibos to go on pre-order, but I think that's where I'm coming from. I'm just really glad that Nintendo finished the Smash run, but I almost wish they had kind of, I guess they had to finish it because that was like, that was their thing, and most people were worried that if they finished the Smash run they would kind of like sunset amiibo, but I think they've shown that they're interested in keeping it around. We have the Metroid amiibos coming in September, we have the Super Mario Odyssey ones coming in October, And those look really great. I don't know. I feel like the amiibo that they came out with Smash were just so constrained to the design of the game that they weren't able to actually design a really cool looking Link amiibo. Like, if you compare the 7 Links that came out with the 30th anniversary series to the Link that came out with Smash, it's kind of night and day. Mm-hmm.
Like, Splatoon has the advantage, right, of being able to use the ink as the stand. And I would say, like, Bayonetta, she's the one that attacks with her hair, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like Bayonetta might have been able to get away with, like, using her hair as a stand.
Yeah, and I guess that's...
a support, but you're right. Like, the majority of them use those clear plastic crappy-looking ones. Although, at least they're clear and not yellow.
No,
like the first Link one.
Or I've been hearing that the champion set for Zelda, that's another one that's coming out in December, probably, like one of the chick from the desert, she's got this really poorly placed support stand.
Yeah.
And I mean, we like to say Nintendo's kind of learned a lot of things, but I think they worry too much about the design of the character and less about the function of the amiibo. Like, if most of the point of these figures is to scan them once or twice and then put them up on a shelf as a display. And when it can't even function as a display, that's kind of where I draw the line of, like, that doesn't look cool. I'm not going to be able to put that up on my shelf. I've gotten a lot better at that, but they also have gotten a lot better of presenting these in a specific way. And I feel like for people who aren't collectors like myself, and you were into Splatoon 2, you could look at the Splatoon 2 amiibos and think to yourself, you know what, that looks really cool. I want to have something from this game that I can put on my shelf or take to my office or something like that, because you're a fan of video games. I think that if you're looking at Splatoon 2 amiibos, that's kind of the ones to go for, especially the squid. Like, the squid looks really cool, but it's really dependent on I don't think, so what do they do in game is probably a good question, but not a whole lot. I think they unlock an armor set, and yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with the amiibos. I still don't think that they function in game to a point where you have to absolutely buy them. Although there was news that one of the amiibos for Metroid, the new Metroid game coming out, is going to unlock a hard mode that is only accessible by having the amiibo.
So that's kind of cool. I mean, yeah. I like that they're tying kind of in-game DLC to the amiibo, and it's not just like, hey, I'm a cute little plastic toy. Like, there's actually some functionality to them. I like that. I like the ones, too, that give you different things across different games. So, I mean, like the Link amiibos from Smash and stuff worked in Breath of the Wild, right, and gave you different daily rewards and stuff. So those are the kind of like game functional amiibos that I'm interested in. Although, that being said, there are some pretty freaking cool, specifically the Mario, like, and the Bowser. I love the Bowser in the Tux amiibo. Like, I really, really want that one.
People, it's funny, I follow, we bring up the subreddit for Amiibo Canada a lot, and they right now they've moved from the fever that is all the recent amiibos coming out late July to kind of the Super NES and the Mario Odyssey and Super Metroid. And it's really interesting to see this community kind of like finish with one thing and latch on to the next. And in terms of in-game functionality, you're right. Like, I think that the ability to get daily rewards, like giving you that incentive to scan it every day, is really cool. I'm not necessarily as big a fan of just scanning it once and unlocking something. It kind of feels like that's like a DLC, basically, except you have a physical thing to determine it. I know a lot of folks are kind of upset by the fact that it unlocks a hard mode in Samus Returns. I mean,
because they just like wanted that to be in the game.
Yeah, I guess like that's kind of where they're coming from. And I get it. Like, you're technically paying $15, $16 to unlock hard mode, but you also get this physical item.
Yeah, it's really hard to actually price the value of an amiibo because they vary so much in actual quality, like you were just talking about. And then they also vary in what they do in the games. And some of them get more value over time. Like we said, like the ones that you buy for one game, then unlock more stuff in like Breath of the Wild. So it's really hard to nail down like what you're actually paying for with these amiibo, and they, because they do just vary so much from from piece to piece.
Yeah, and some of the ones that, like you mentioned, Link, and you mentioned, you know, some Mario ones, some of those have a higher in-game value over time as they release new entries in the franchise. And Nintendo's shown that they're willing to add some sort of amiibo compatibility to each of their main releases. I think the only one that didn't really have it was maybe ARMS, but they didn't have ARMS amiibos.
Right.
So, you know, with Breath of the Wild, you could use any Zelda series one, and that was all Smash. That was the new ones they released.
You can use amiibos with Mario Kart too, can't you?
Yeah, and that was a once unlock kind of get a costume for your Mii character. So that was really cool. I know I really liked Hyrule Warriors implementation, where you could use it was similar to Breath of the Wild, where you would scan an amiibo each day, and if it was a Zelda amiibo, you would unlock like a deeper unlock, like a weapon or something. And if it was a just a random one, you would unlock, you know, I don't want to say ammo, but like rupees and items for unlocking new hardware and stuff. But and I think they're going to do the same with Fire Emblem Warriors, where you can use your Fire Emblem amiibo as well as every other amiibo you have to scan for free resources. And I really do dig the fact that they're throwing a bone to the amiibo that'll just never get use in a mainline series. Like, I'm looking at the Bayonetta amiibos here. They probably won't get used in a Bayonetta game. I don't think we're going to get a Bayonetta 3, or we're not going to get the Final Fantasy 7 remake on Switch. But I'm staring at a Cloud amiibo right now. Like, it's, I know the value of that isn't going to increase based on the games that it uses, but the fact that I can have this cool statuette of a character that you probably wouldn't be able to buy a solid collectible of. But at a certain point, you do have to draw the line of, like, how many links do you need? And Nintendo seems to think that you need all of them.
Well, that's because Nintendo knows there's people out there like me who just love Zelda and love Link and will pretty much purchase any amiibos that they create.
Except for the champion P stand. I don't know if I want to go get the... I can't even remember her name, and I feel terrible because she's
the main character. The Gerudo or whatever.
The Gerudo chick. Lady. Yeah.
I can't remember her name either.
Someone will yell it out into the internet. But yeah, I don't know how many. I have a whole tray of Zelda ones. When I get back into Breath of the Wild, I'll take the tray and I'll bring it over to the table and be like, all right, let's open some chests. And then before you know it, it's like, well, there goes my hour. I guess I can't play. But no, I mean, I continue to collect these things, and eventually I'll have like some sort of, you know, permanent space for them. And I will admit, like, I still buy ones that, like, I probably didn't need to buy that one. But at a certain point, it's just, you kind of have to lean into it. And, like, this is the thing that I do. Some people have different hobbies, different expenses. And, you know, I like to have
this
these
is
little
yours.
Trinkets.
That's totally fine. So
exactly.
What do the amiibo actually do in Splatoon 2?
So in Splatoon 2, each one of these unlocks a weapon, a set, an armor set, and a different cosmetic armor set that I believe you can only unlock by using the amiibo. Now, there's some incentive, I don't know what it is, but it only gave me the helmet for each of them. So I think, and it said, like, keep playing and return to unlock more. So I don't know whether it's tied to your level or whether it's tied to just scanning your amiibo every day. I'm not actually sure. But the process was fairly harmless. But the other thing that amiibo do is that they can store data on them. And the one thing that Splatoon 2 supports is you scan the amiibo and you can save your outfit and your stats to the amiibo. I don't think your stats, but your outfit, you can save it there. And then you can go to a friend's place and play Splatoon at their house, and you just scan your amiibo and suddenly you have all the gear that you have at home.
Okay.
Which is a big deal, because the gear, you know, is kind of the thing that dictates your character's special abilities. So your weapon tells you what kind of weapon you'll have, what kind of sub-weapon. So, like, grenades, are they sticky? Are they, you know, rapid fire? And then your superpower, which is kind of like a charge-up thing.
Ultimate?
Yeah, yeah, your ultimate, and your gear kind of gives you a little boost. Like, I don't know, you're faster in ink. You your respawn timer is decreased, stuff like that.
Okay, so it's like an actual kit. It's not just cosmetics.
No, yeah, it is cosmetic, but it's
taking
mainly
your character.
Exactly, for the most part, like you're bringing your character over, and your levels don't really dictate anything. Maybe minus some matchmaking. You are bringing stats in, but I think matchmaking works based on gear as well. Like if someone has really high powered gear, they're not going to be paired with someone who has zero gear or zero upgraded gear. So I haven't played much with the amiibo. I scanned them all once, I registered them, and I just wanted to unlock the little thing. But they don't seem to do a ton in game. But I think that's kind of where, you know, Nintendo stands. Like they don't do... They haven't launched a amiibo game. Like they haven't done, and we've talked about this before, they haven't done what, what's the other ones? Lego Dimensions, Disney Infinity. Well, yeah, okay. Bad. Disney Infinity. There's one like Skylanders.
Skylanders, yeah.
It was there, and then I said, you know, like Skylanders. Oh wait, yeah, like Skylanders. they haven't done that game where they've done the amiibo game where it's like a shell.
Yeah,
where
it's like a sandbox. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't think they ever will, because I think their mentality is like, we're creating these toys that you can then use in game to unlock little stuff. And like you said, as time goes on, you'll always want to have them at the ready, because the new game that comes out will use all of them. Mm-hmm. So, but in Splatoon 2, I don't think it supports outside amiibos. I haven't tried it, but I don't really understand what it would do. I should try it to kind of see mm-hmm. what happens. It would be really cool if, like, say I put the Pikmin amiibo on, then I unlock, like, a Pikmin-designed t-shirt. Mm-hmm. That would be really neat. But I haven't tried it yet. I don't believe that it supports it, but the amiibo is a small portion of Splatoon 2 and probably not why people would pick that game up. But for those who do have amiibo, it's certainly one small aspect of it that they can look forward to.
So have you played much like multiplayer? Because I know I've had multiple people send me messages being like, do you have Splatoon 2? Let's play. And I'm like, no, I'm kind of waiting to see what the reviews are like and what Ryan thinks and if it's something that people are going to be playing for more than a weekend.
You know, the great thing about Splatoon 2 is that it's a lot like Splatoon 1 in that you come into the game and you get what you expect. It's Turf War. Turf War is the main mode in regular battle where a lot of people get their feet wet, and it's basically you yeah, you
their feet
that.
Inky?
Yeah. But you have to, you know, whoever paints the most wins. So whoever has the most ground coverage with their ink wins the match. 3 minutes, very
that's
quick.
That's what we played in Toronto, right? When we tested this out back in January? Okay.
This we played at the preview event, and it's not much different. There's a map rotation, so every time I've gone in, there's two different maps to play. There has been some overlap. I don't know how many maps they have, but I do know that choosing between the two maps randomly is a nice touch. Kind of going in and you're kind of getting in the zone with those maps, and I find that really helps people like me who don't play multiplayer games religiously, who go in and know exactly what map's coming up. So if you get choosing between two maps, you have, after like two or three rounds, you've got some repeats and you start to get the real feel of that map and start to be able to compete a little better. But the multiplayer mode is pretty basic. Like you queue up, you play with three other people against four. It's 4-on-4 matches. You go 3 minutes, it ends, and you're queued back up for another match very quickly. I haven't
run into
any issues
there. There probably can't be any voice chat, right? Because there's no support of voice chat in
Nintendo. I'm surprised you haven't latched on to this one, or maybe you're leading, but there is voice chat, but only for friends and only through the new Nintendo online app that anybody can download. It's free. It's free for everybody at this time. And basically how it works is that you invite, from what I understand, you invite people in the game, but then you have to invite them separately. You create a lobby in the app. No. Anyways, you create a lobby, then
you
invite
people. You have
to invite
them in two places. You can't just... Yes. Be in a party with friends and have it automatically put you in voice chat.
Exactly. And I think maybe it helps you out a little bit saying like, hey, you're in a party with these people. Do you want to invite them? And it's kind of like, I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about that because it's kind of like Discord. Like, there is that second step. But the difference is that I guess the quality is good, but there's no background audio. So as soon as you, like, hit the home button or you close the screen even, it pauses the voice chat. So you can't hear anybody else and they can't hear you, which is kind of a bummer because that's draining the battery.
You can't have the voice chat and the game going at the same time?
No. The voice chat's on your phone. So it's done only through the app.
It's not an app on the Switch store.
No.
It's on your phone. Oh, F that.
Yeah, it's super weird. Now, if you remember our time with Discord and Mario Kart, it's one of those things where you have an earbud in for voice and then you have the audio playing or you try to have another headphone in. Like, it's not ideal. It's kind of a bummer. And honestly, I feel like the solution would have been to just say, hey, if you want to use voice chat, you're going to have to buy a Pro controller and you're going to just jam like a, you know, a headset into it. And that's it. You know, I think you would have had less flack if you just asked people to buy the Pro controller than you would have got by just creating this app.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this app is a stopgap to kind of say like, well, people want voice chat, but we're not ready to offer voice chat. Like the system came in very hot. Like we both know the software on that thing felt undercooked. Mm-hmm. And
which is the exact reason why I would just use Discord on my phone. If that's the solution that I have to be plugged into my phone in order to voice chat, then I'm not going to use Nintendo's crap.
No. There's no reason to, and I feel like they've gotten the news, they've gotten the heat, they've gotten the feedback.
Does it at least like import your friends list and stuff? Does it talk to the Switch?
It does talk to the Switch.
Okay.
You can only invite friends. The voice chat doesn't work for random people. And if you really look at Nintendo's slate for the rest of the year, Splatoon 2 was the game that you could kind of see needing voice chat because it is cooperative. You're on a team. You're playing with friends.
Doesn't ARMS have teams though?
It does, but that game's kind of like frantic, and I feel like voice chat in that game would be similar to what you'd want in Mario Kart, just to talk shit and smash talk it and all that fun stuff. I think Splatoon,
you mean smack talk?
Smash talk, you know, it's a Nintendo game. We gotta be a little nicer here, a little more PG. Smack talk. But I think that when you look at Splatoon, Nintendo kind of made a call, like, we either ship this with no voice chat and people give us hell, or we ship it with some form of voice chat and at least they're giving us hell for trying. And they tried, but I'm not going to use it either. Like, I have no interest, but I haven't had an instance where I would have really appreciated talking to these random people. Now, when I play with friends, maybe I will really want to have the ability to converse with my team. I think that'd be really helpful. But yeah, as of right now, it's not
also it's a pretty quick kind of a game, right? Like, yeah. I'm almost picturing, you know, the mode in Mario Kart in battle mode when you have like the piranhas on half of the players and they're trying to catch, it's like cops and robbers. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like going all over the place. It's super, super fast. Like you're whizzing by people. That's what I picture when I picture Splatoon multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you could even really coordinate, you know, like any better than just looking at the mini map and seeing what needs to be painted and where your allies are, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's quite simplistic and frantic at the same time, so I don't know if voice chat would actually be helpful.
And that's where I'm coming from. Like, I think that, you know, Nintendo didn't need to rush out some piece of software for the Switch or a piece of hardware that they didn't think was necessary, but it was nice of them to throw a bone to people who are already saying, well, I'm just using Discord. Maybe some people will like the official version and they want to use the official version. I don't know who those people are. They're not me or you. But if we were to do a game night for Splatoon 2, we would just probably use Discord and we would rough it out for that 2-hour stretch. And it's only because we're interacting with, you know, fans of the show, not because you, like you said, you actually have to coordinate, because you don't. You use the map to see what needs to be painted. You hit a little button that says, ouch, if you die and there's a bunch of people around you, that lets people know like, hey, don't go here right now, kind of find some friends. And the way it's, you know, in Splatoon, you know, when you die and you come back, you're given the option to jump directly to a teammate. So when it encourages you to open up that map, you see where you need to cover, and then you also see where your your allies are and whether they're in danger and whether you need to make a decision to go there and help them out or not even go near there because they're overrun. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, there's just not a lot of communication needed.
Required, yeah.
But there is a mode in this game that would benefit from some form of communication that worked a little better than just the button prompts to let people know, like map prompts. Mm-hmm. And that's Salmon Run, which is the horde mode, basically. It's another cooperative, but you're playing against AI and collecting salmon eggs. So you are
okay.
Decimating salmons, stealing their eggs, and then putting them in a catcher to make money. Poor salmons, they just didn't see it coming. I don't know what it is about the Inklings, but they just have this real problem with salmon. It's kind of sick, really. But yeah, so the mode works. It's weird. It's a limited time thing. It pops up fairly regularly, but I find whenever I've wanted to play, it like starts. No, it's not today. It's tomorrow from 8 a.m.
Oh, okay.
To Friday.
I wonder why they do that.
I don't know.
Like, it's so weird to me.
But the thing is, like, I feel like Splatoon, like when I played Splatoon, I had gotten a review copy and I played a lot of it pre-launch. And then when the game came out, I barely played it. And I think with Splatoon 2, I'm realizing why that was, because there's just enough around Splatoon 2 to keep you busy whenever you get bored. You know, oh, I'm done with Turf War and I'm not quite up to ranked mode yet, so I'm going to try Salmon Run because it's active. Oh, well, Salmon Run's not active right now. I'm going to do single player for a bit. I'm getting sick of single player. I'm going to jump back into multiplayer. Like, there's enough there where you're constantly jumping in and out of modes, and it's a recurring cycle. And combined with the fact that Nintendo is adding more and more content over the next year, at which they've committed to, is nice. And then they have the Splatfests that are coming. I think they happen once a month or once every 2 weeks. And this weekend's is ketchup versus mayonnaise. So I don't know what fan.
Ew.
Well, you don't actually spray with the mayonnaise or the.
Oh.
You just choose a side and you wear a cool t-shirt to show your allegiance to economy.
I see.
I'm wondering why they went mayonnaise and they didn't go like ketchup mustard. Because I feel like maybe mayonnaise ketchup is like an American thing and they actually do compete. But I feel like in Canada, like mustard just has a higher game. Maybe
I have no idea. I feel like too. Like, I don't know. Splashing white condiments around places gives me a real bad visual.
You don't actually spray the mayonnaise. It's just a thing that exists. It's your team mayonnaise. Like, when you're, you know...
I don't even want to be team mayonnaise.
That's why I'm team ketchup, man. All
so
the way.
Freaking weird.
Team ketchup. It's Japanese. So, yeah, anyways, there's just a lot to do in the game. And Salmon Run's one of those things that when you do actually get into it, it is a lot of fun. Because they're, again, very quick. Horde mode in Gears of War is like a four-hour game. If you go all the way. Salmon Run is a little bit longer than a match of Turf War, but not much longer, like say like 15 minutes max.
So like a Mass Effect?
Yes, exactly.
Multiplayer session?
Very much like a Mass Effect. There's three rounds and enemies spawn and there are the normal, you know, fodder.
They spawn, get it? Because yeah. Salmon?
Keep doing that. They spawn. There's mini salmon and like little bigger salmon. Then there's these boss salmon and there's eight different kinds and they're all different. They require different techniques to take them down, and then when you kill the boss salmon, they drop the eggs, you steal the eggs, and you ensure that salmon then go extinct.
This sounds like a terrible game mode. Like,
yeah. Well, the lore behind poor Splatoon salmon. Is that it's the far future and humans have died out and the only thing left from the humans' age is like a cat that was flash frozen and had then been thawed by these Inklings. This is lore. Look it up. It's real.
Okay.
Now there's a second cat.
I really want to buy this game now just because of this crazy Inkling world.
I don't want to say they put a lot of thought into like the story, but they've put thought into it more than you would actually expect. Like, it's actually similar, and I'm not trying to like compare it to Overwatch, but it's similar to Overwatch in that it is a multiplayer game that has this story that they've attached to it. Now, you know, Overwatch's story is much more complex and makes a hell of a lot more sense. but Splatoon's is this like quirky Nintendo story that they've put in here, and there's also a single player, so it's got an edge on
Overwatch.
Gonna
say
there.
So does this lore come in the single player, or is this just, you know, like what is the single player actually like?
So the single player is set up with similar to the first game, where you have 4 or 5 hub worlds and then like 4 to 10 sub levels in each world, and in those worlds you're being guided, you're like an agent of the Squid Heroes or something stupid, and it's one of the characters from the first game kind of guiding you on this path to save Inkling Plaza or whatever. The fish has gone missing again, so they are gonna go find the weird fish that powers everything. I don't know. And
I thought we hated the fish. Or no. Using the fish for power.
It's a different kind of fish. So there's these little fish that power things. They're like look like little light bulb fish, and they're being enslaved by the octopus things,
okay,
who are the enemies. But that's weird, because one of the octopus people is the chick that introduces the maps to you every day. Like, why aren't we like taking her out and kicking her out of Inkling Town? Like,
is that what your little purple amiibo is? One of the octopus guys?
No. That's a squid Inkling. That's he's cool.
Oh, that's different. Okay.
It's different. You know, one has 2 tentacles and the other has 8. Keep up.
I'm finding this lore and this universe very confusing.
It is. It's very confusing, and it's hard to follow at times, and
there's just ink everywhere, and that's the game.
It's quirky. It's a very quirky game, and if you really want to get into it, you can, and if you just want to play it, you can. The single player doesn't lay it on thick, but there is this, like, similar to the first game, these like picture books that you unlock, and it tells the story of the Splatoon world in this kind of like picture book-esque, where it shows the picture. It's very hieroglyphic type thing, like a water painting type situation. Okay. And then there's like a little text underneath that's like the translated Splatoon talk or whatever, and it explains little things. I think this story is kind of bridging the events of the first game into the next game. Which
I thought there was no single player in the first game.
There was, yeah. And it was really cool too. The bosses, I played already one boss fight in the single player, and again, they remind me a lot of Super Mario Sunshine, which is always a good thing. Don't anyone...
I like Super Mario Sunshine.
Exactly. It's takes really a good
lot
game.
Of, yeah, it takes a lot of flack, but yeah. I enjoy it.
I don't understand where that flack comes from, because honestly, it's a fantastic game. And I will take your emails. We will do a whole episode of, you know, you guys
defending
talking about...
Yeah, Super defending... Mario Sunshine.
That's why I want the virtual console to come back, so we finally get GameCube games. If they put out Super Mario Sunshine on the virtual console, I will pay.
Virtual console, or what if they did, because we're going to talk about this a little bit later in news, what if they did like the SNES Mini, but the GameCube Mini? How good would that be?
I would love that, and I think that the GameCube is not far removed enough that you could just sell me the cube. And then let me just plug my controller. I have like 5 GameCube controllers over there. If you ask me why, I will just tell you it's because of Smash. Because Smash has supported those things since Melee. So, yes, I would love a GameCube Mini. But I would also love to be able to buy one. So I'd prefer a virtual console, because I know I can just buy the game. But I feel like, you know, Super Mario Sunshine, if they do a GameCube virtual console... That's like the first game they do, right? Like, there isn't another game.
Well, Buffy was on GameCube, okay. So.
I feel like that's a rights nightmare. But thinking about that.
It was so good, though, dude. It was so good.
I know.
It's one of my favorite games. I talk about it all the time. I know.
What was the other one that you bring up? You played The Hobbit. Was it The Hobbit?
Yes!
No one else played these games, Jocelyn.
I know.
But
they were really good.
That's fine, you know, as long as they were really good.
I feel like you don't believe me. Well.
I believe you. I want to do a retrospective on GameCube where you talk about The Hobbit, Buffy, and the Harry Potter game, and I'll talk about Super Mario Sunshine and Metroid Prime and...
Things that actual people played.
I don't know.
Not things that sold one copy to me.
I don't know. 2. Hachikumo knows what you're talking about, but he bought it on Xbox. So
I'm pretty sure it must have been the same game. I can't remember what it was. And it would have been The Hobbit on PS2. Yeah, so see? Chat room is agreeing with me. These are fabulous games. I just played them on GameCube, because that's the one that I had. But this is the same time frame as PS2 and Xbox, the original Xbox. So yes.
I had the purple lunchbox as well, and I loved every game that came out that I purchased on that thing. It was probably the greatest Nintendo console. When I look back at it, I know the N64 is probably like a lot of people, and then the Super NES is another one that comes to mind, but I think the GameCube is kind of where I stopped being just a person who plays video games and a person who just loved video games and looked forward to the next one. It's kind of where I started to pay attention, you know, like where you actually knew about a game a year or two before it released and you were paying attention to its coverage. I never did that before the GameCube, so it's kind of where I'm at, but yeah,
Splatoon's enough really tangent, good. Enough nostalgia.
Yeah, sorry, but
how to bring it back.
Yeah, Splatoon 2, it's really good. I'm sure I'll talk more about it in the coming weeks as I poke around through it and do some more Salmon Run and beat single player and unlocked ranked mode. This is just the first 4 or 5 hours. And if you have a Switch, I mean, really, it's you're like me and you haven't bought a game since Mario Kart, or you bought ARMS about a month and a half ago.
I was just saying, I feel like there's a lot of people who got either Splatoon 2 or ARMS. I don't feel like there's a lot of crossover, and I feel like I've gotten more messages. I think I had like one person ask if I picked up ARMS. I don't think it ended up being all that popular. I saw people streaming it for the first like week, and then it really seemed to fall off. So
yeah, I mean,
but it sounds like there's way more to do in Splatoon 2 than I thought there was going to be. So I'm happy, and I think I'm probably going to pick it up.
There's a good range, and honestly, Nintendo has said that they're going to support it. They're going to offer free content updates for at least a year or more, and that's maps, weapons, maps and weapons. I don't know if they'll add modes. They did add a mode last time, but it was kind of
They could also add modes and characters, right? Or more story missions, or, like there's armor. All kinds of stuff they could add.
Yeah, and then they've committed to at least 2 years of Splatfest. So that's like, gives you a reason to come back and compete for your love of ketchup.
Or mayonnaise.
I mean, but we don't talk about mayonnaise people here. Yeah. Like, if you're a mayonnaise person, I'm sorry. You're welcome, but I mean, ketchup's way better. It's not even comparable. Like, what would you eat that, you know, I'm looking at this hot dog and I'm going to put mayonnaise or ketchup on it. Like, they don't go together. It's not even a choice, right?
Calm down, Ryan. Calm down.
Sorry.
Well, I'm glad you're having so much fun in Splatoon 2.
And you have to get it so we can play.
And everything else. Hopefully I'll be able to talk about it a little bit next week. But this week, I've been playing something. It cost me $11 Canadian, so it's definitely down there in terms of pricing. It's called Kingdoms and Castles, and it's this like city builder, except for it's medieval themed. So very, very kind of similar in theme to like a SimCity kind of a thing, except it's really, really simple. There's no tutorial though, so if it's one of those things where it's like, I would say it's amazing if you've never played like a city builder before, then this is a good one to start with, except that there is no tutorial. So it's a lot of like trial and error.
Is it early access?
No. Oh. It came out last week.
Because I was going to say, like, if it doesn't have a tutorial, it feels like that might be the reason. But if it's already come out, like...
Huh. Yeah, no, it is a smaller title, and like I said, it cost me $10, so, you know, but it's, that's the thing that I feel like you have to kind of keep in mind with this game, because it is sort of simplistic. It has, the same sort of, like, little, it's very, like, kind of blocky, not quite 8-bit, but kind of blocky, and then it's got, like, all these little people running around that remind me of, like, Roller Coaster Tycoon. And you don't tell them what to do. They just kind of automatically walk around. So, like, you build homes, and then each home can hold 5 citizens, and the citizens are the ones that go out and do all the work. So you just kind of, like, click on things that you want done, like buildings you want constructed or trees you want cut down or whatever. And then when a citizen is available, they'll just go and do it. So you can kind of, like, queue up actions. Although you will get an error message every time, like, if you queue up 10 actions and you have 5 citizens, it'll be like, we don't have enough citizens to complete this. We don't have enough citizens to complete this. So I just basically ignore my, like, information feed because it tells me a lot of stuff that I already know. But yeah, like I said, it's a cheap title. It's a lot of fun. You get attacked randomly by dragons, ogres, and Vikings. And so you basically have to, like, build your town, and placement of your town is harder than you would think it would be. You get randomly generated maps each time. And this is another thing where I feel like a kind of like starter world or tutorial world or something would be helpful, because the first time I played for about an hour and then I had to reset and start again because I hadn't placed my town in the world in a place that was close to some of the resources that I needed later on in the game. Oh. And your kind of tiles, your land tiles are colored. But I didn't realize that meant anything. So you've got kind of like a light green, yellowish tile that's a barren tile. And then you've got like a darker green and then like a dark green. And it's like varying amounts of fertile land. So like you can't place a farm on something that's barren. And I was kind of like, I wish I would have known that before I put my keep here and started my city. So, I mean, like I said, there's no tutorial, so it can be a little bit of a steep learning curve. And then after that, it kind of, the complexity of something like a SimCity isn't there. So that's why I say it's really good if it's your first city building sim. But yeah, like it is fairly simplistic, and the UI, I just kind of started clicking on things and then figured it out. So it's not too complicated where I think it would turn people off. But it's definitely not like, this is how you do all of the things. So
it sounds like the like a city builder kind of mixed with you know, Civilization a little bit, where
Kind of a little bit, but again, it's not as complicated as Civilization. Like you can't there's no any like diplomacy or anything. Like it's just, it's like random disasters in the like original SimCity, right? Like you can't control it. It's just every once in a while a dragon's going to come and breathe fire. And then sometimes Vikings are going to like row their boat and then pillage your town and then run away.
Like they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it sounds really cool and looks so again, the graphics you mentioned, kind of there's a cute simplicity to it, and it looks like it's kind of voxel based where everything's made out of little squares.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But they still have, like, I don't want to say it's, like, Minecraft-y or anything like that, because they are more detailed than that. And all the buildings that you build are detailed but cartoony at the same time. So it's kind of hard to explain. You almost have to go and look at the art style to get it. But I really, really enjoy it. And you can... You kind of build your civilization or your city at the beginning, and then you can only kind of do stuff like farming and lumber, and you're kind of ramping up, because building your castle, oh my god, dude, so many resources. Like, I don't even know how big my city is going to have to be before I can actually get the resources to, like, build walls around and make a castle.
Like because the designs they've got in here are just kind of... They look really crazy, like really complex. Like you could have
a lot of fun. Like, yeah, you can. And it is a little bit more kind of open-ended, I guess. And you can be a little bit creative because you can... They give you almost like wall sections. So you can build your wall as high as you want it to. And then it just kind of puts like a castle keep ramparts sort of a design on whatever the top piece is. So you just, like, if you want your wall to be, like, four pieces high, you just build the four pieces, and then it puts ramparts on the top, and you've got yourself your first castle tower. And then you build your walls, and you can go, like, three pieces by, like, four pieces and make yourself a wall. And it's really, really, really interesting, because then you can design your castle, make your castle look exactly how you want it to, instead of being stuck with whatever, you know, the in-game model of a castle looks like. You can make it as big or as small and protect as many of your citizens as you want to, or, you know, just leave them out there for the Vikings. And then you can construct, like, archery towers and ballistas, and you can make barracks and all this kind of stuff to create dudes to protect all of your other dudes. You can make soldiers to protect your citizens. There we go.
It looks really, again, it just looks like this really cute and tiny fun time killer to get in, relax, have some fun. Like it's not one of those games where if you don't action right away you're being punished. Like, do you feel like you're able to be a little more relaxed in this sim builder? Like, it's not constantly going and punishing you as you try to figure out, oh no, where am I going to place this road?
Right. Like, so I think I ended up playing in my new city for about an hour and a half, I want to say. So I did, I played almost 3 hours altogether. And I played my second city a little bit longer, and I had 2 dragon attacks in that time. So it gave me like half an hour, 45 minutes without any dragon attacks. And you can pause the game. You can like speed it up the way you could in SimCity or pretty much any simulation game. So, and I did find there's different difficulty levels. There's easy, which, or it's not actually called easy, but there's easy mode where nothing attacks you, where you can basically just build a city, and you have really long summers and really short winters, because it does have a seasonal thing to it. So when you're growing crops, you have to basically grow enough crops that then will last your citizens all the way through the winter, because you can't grow anything in the winter, which makes sense.
Hmm.
So the normal mode has long summers, short winters, and sporadic attacks. And then hard mode is basically like short summers, long winters, and increased incidences of aggression. So you get attacked more.
Hmm. Okay. That sounds, it sounds like they're adding to it. I'm just looking at the Steam page here, and it looks like they have a bit of a roadmap. Even if it's not in early access, it's something that they're looking to expand upon as the game continues to flourish in the Steam setting. And it's really nice to see that. I like when developers kind of post a roadmap, because then you get an idea of what they're thinking in terms of support. I think more games need to do that, where they're saying like, okay, we know that this type of game would benefit from having a community that continues to talk about us, so here's what we're aiming for down the road. And it doesn't have to be crazy detailed. It can just be a bullet pointed list of like, here's what we're thinking, subject to change, please don't get angry if it doesn't happen the way we say it will. But a game like this, I think it's simplicity in nature, but they can add like little things to it piece by piece, and hopefully one of those is a tutorial, like you said. It could use a little bit of a booster to your knowledge of the game, as opposed to, but then maybe that's the fun of figuring it out. It's kind of like Civ, where if you turn off, you know, tutorials, you just kind of figure it out. You screw up your first civilization, you scrap it, you start over, and then you have your real game. You know, everyone knows the second game of Civ is the one that actually counts. The first one doesn't count.
And the other thing is too, you mentioned the developers and their roadmap. They've also put out a patch already, and it's because they are a smaller studio and they're really listening to all of the feedback and stuff. Like, they added different ways to pan your camera. They added like VSync, and then they fixed a whole bunch of bugs that were reported on the first day. So, I mean, they basically took feedback from the community. Another thing was your stone buildings and statues and wells and stuff could catch on fire. And then they were like, that doesn't really make sense. And the developers were like, yeah, you're right, that doesn't really make sense. So then they disabled it. So now those buildings are basically fireproof, which a stone well filled with water makes sense that it wouldn't burn, right?
Yeah, so pretty funny, but no, not doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, so they have been really open to listening to the community. And like I said, they've already put a patch in, even though it came out, I think, July 20th or something like that. So it came out, I guess, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, not too long
ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. So yeah, and like I said, it's another one similar to Yonder that I played last week, where it's a simplified version of games that I like. So I can go in, spend 3 hours, and get a very similar sense of accomplishment to what I would get from like a Civ game that took me 20 hours. So it's like, if I want the SimCity or the Civilizations experience, I can play this instead and get that feeling in a much shorter amount of time. There are times that I'm going to want a more complicated experience, and then that's when I'm going to boot up Civ 6. But in the meantime, for when I have a couple hours in an afternoon to kill, this is a really great, small, digestible experience that's going to do the same sort of thing. So I like it a lot. I would definitely recommend it. It was super fun. And like I said, it was $10. So it's kind of hard to go wrong at that price.
Yeah, it's a nice
If you like city building.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a really good city builder in quite a while. I mean, ever since SimCity kind of died in a fire, like, you kind of want to you're always looking for that next big one. And I know that SimCity left a hole in the ground that was filled by some other games are really good, like City Skylines was really good. You know, Civ obviously has a city building component, but you don't have control. You don't have like really finite control over the Civ civilization city building. Like obviously you can choose, you know, your civilizations that you start up and then they expand based on what buildings you put in. But I feel like Kingdoms and Castles looks to be more, you're more in control. Like if you want to build.
Well, that's what I mean. Like if I say I want to build a keep. Or I want to build a castle, I'm not stuck with whatever my civilization's castle looks like, and that just goes on a square.
And you know, choose like I where can to put it. Say,
and you choose where to put it, yeah. So, well, you and you choose where to start your cities in Civ City, Civ City, Civ 6 as well. But you have more control in like exactly the way that your buildings are facing and where your walls are going to go and where your roads are going to go. So it's not like cookie cutter the way that Civilization VI is. So, and again, like they are different for sure. But still, I find this is just it's simplified to the point of enjoyable, but still allows you to be more creative than some of those other titles. So it's very cool. You guys should check it out. We have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for honest consumer reviews. Check out The Geek Review found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. We thank you guys very much for your support of The Gamers Inn. If you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thegamersinn. Thank you to each and every one of our patrons. Our game night this month is actually... we might have to move it because it's supposed to be Thursday the 17th, which is when we actually get access to our brand new house that we bought. So since that is our closing date, I can't guarantee that we will actually have internet at the new house. So may not be doing game night on Thursday the 17th. But yeah, so I'm going to tentatively say the 24th instead. So if you guys are interested in telling us what to play and coming on stream and playing some multiplayer titles with us, possibly even Splatoon 2, then please do go and check out patreon.com/thegamersinn. Which brings us to our topic of the week this week, which is we've just got a couple of news odds and ends that we're going to talk about. First of all, the SNES Classic pre-orders coming later this month. And Nintendo has committed that they will be shipping specific launch units. Mm-hmm. So ones that you can't pre-order, so there will be actual in-store units come launch day.
Yes.
So what are you going to do, Ryan? Are you going to pre-order or are you going to line up on launch day?
I'm pre-ordering. There's no
way. If you can.
Okay. I think I've been training for years in the Nintendo pre-order game. Like I handled, you know, all these amiibos. I got an NES Mini by pre-ordering it, and I think the Super NES Mini is something that I have faith that Nintendo looked at the shit show they created with the NES Mini and said, holy crap, we can't do that again. Even if we want to sell this thing, we have to make sure that we develop a good amount of these systems. And they've even addressed some of the other concerns, like the cords are longer. And I know we haven't had a chance to talk about this. Like, I think you were away the week this got announced, but... It's, you know, got longer cords for the controllers. You're getting two controllers in the box. It's got games that have never been released, games that are certainly classics that you would expect to be on there. It's a package designed to sell, and I think Nintendo's going to come to the table with maybe not enough to satisfy every single person out there, but I feel
you
like
never
you're
can.
Exactly. You're never going to make everybody happy, but I feel like the price point, the games, the controllers, it's showing that Nintendo's serious about this thing and that they are going to try to sell as many as they can while selling through all their units. Because that's how Nintendo does this thing. This is a limited item. It's going to sell through. But I think this item is going to sell through in a longer period. You know, they've committed to not only pre-orders, but they've committed to systems at launch as well as systems throughout the rest of the year. That's a solid 3 months of restocks. I think people are going to get them, is what I'm trying to say.
And I was going to say, so that's my next point, is how much faith, given the kind of supply chain issues Nintendo has seemed to have in the past, how much faith can we actually put in their quote-unquote commitment to us?
I mean, I don't think you can put like a ton of faith, but I think if you I think if you look at the numbers and you look at what happened with the NES Mini and you look at the way Nintendo handled that, they can't do that again. And as someone who's been collecting...
Yeah, it was basically canceled before most people were able to even get it.
Exactly. Like, they ripped the carpet from underneath, and a lot of people had the assumption that they ripped the carpet out because of the Super NES Mini. And you think, like, they make more money by perfecting the product, even if the product is different. They make more money by perfecting it and getting a supply chain that makes sense. You'd think that if they continue to produce the NES Mini, you would have then had a rollover effect making the Super NES Mini in the same situation. Like, the fact that they moved on and they've been able to produce more units means that, well, again, you'll probably have most of the people who absolutely really, really want one will get one. I believe that if
you and I... I hope so, man.
I know.
Because I really want one, and I did not get the first one. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Super
you
NES...
You did. Don't say yeah like you understand.
I understand your pain. But I also think that, yes, this time around we'll be able to. And I think pre-ordering will be fine. I mean, I've certainly had a system that I use to keep an eye on it. I use a combination of the Amiibo Canada subreddit and Discord, so I get a notification every time a post comes up. It's super annoying because it's Reddit, but the one time they post about pre-orders, you'll all be laughing. No more. Yeah, but...
Don't you mean that you'll be the one laughing at us?
Yeah, but you won't be laughing anymore. Anyways, I think we'll all get a chance to pre-order this thing. I honestly have faith that that the pre-orders will be, you know, very strong. And in Canada, and as well as in the States, there are at least three or four retailers, major retailers, that will have pre-orders up. And I've had luck with all of them from time to time. You know, I have never really had much issue.
Yeah, Best Buy has been my biggest problem. Specifically, yeah, with Nintendo supply chain and Best Buy, so I won't be pre-ordering there. I'll probably pre-order through Walmart or EB.
Or EB, yeah. So between Amazon, EB,
there's that's the thing. There are quite a lot of choices. Yeah. So
and they all go.
We get this one.
Exactly. I think we will. And it basically the news here, yeah, the pre-orders will go live later this month, so that they've at least given us a window. I guess later this month in Nintendo terms means sometime in August, you know,
it'll probably realistically be like the 30th.
I think so. And if you're looking for news out there, most retailers will let people know exactly when and at what time pre-orders go up. And that helps. You may think, like, why would they do that? They're just going to crash their system. It actually gives them an opportunity to commit more resources to their servers to make sure that they don't go down. Because, you know, people are going to flood the system if they put these up without warning. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen no matter what. So most companies will kind of give you a heads up. I know Best Buy does. I know you don't like Best Buy, but I think we'll be fine. Although I could be completely wrong, and you'll all go back to this episode saying, like, Ryan, you're crazy. Nintendo botched
it again. You misled us.
But
you have so much faith in Nintendo. I love it. It's great.
I just wish that, like, you and I, we both wish that you could walk into a store, and we saw this with the NES Mini. You walk into a store looking to buy Christmas gifts, and you're like, hey, my brothers love the NES. I should pick one up. And I didn't get that opportunity. And I know a lot of people didn't even get the opportunity to buy one for themselves or for their kids. And I think Nintendo looks at that and they watch $80 walk out of the store, mm-hmm. you know, and they'd be stupid not to commit more resources. But the fact that they're going to juggle this and the Switch is kind of crazy. Like, they're going to have like a hotcakes of a holiday season here if they can kind of juggle successfully.
Yeah, so. If they can actually pull it off, that's true. Although, I mean, the Switch is already out, right? They don't have to worry about hardware stuff for that. Mm. And the Super Nintendo doesn't have any sort of online support, right? So there's no online anything. No multiplayer, no chat, no friends list, no nothing. So I feel like they are totally different beasts, and they really shouldn't have a problem allocating resources because they're not using the same resources for this for these two systems, right? They're totally different. So
yeah, it's just a manufacturing thing. Once the pre-orders go live, I think we'll have a better idea of what demand will be and what the actual supply will be. I think pre-orders really show the hands.
How popular something's going to be.
Yeah, and the supply that we're going to have. The NES Mini, the way the pre-orders went, kind of gave everybody a good indication of how that thing was going to go. A complete and utter shit show. And that's what happened with the pre-orders, and that's what happened with the way that thing continued to exist in stores. It just didn't. I don't think I saw one in the wild once, which is crazy.
I obviously never did.
Yeah. And if I had, I probably would have picked it up because I knew a lot of people who were looking for it.
Someone would have wanted it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And I really do hope that we do see these things actually hit store shelves. I think that would be awesome for everybody in retail, everybody who wants one, because I know for every person who didn't get one, there was an EB Games employee who just cried themselves to sleep because they get calls and they got angry visitors and upset kids. And it's just, it's frustrating.
Yeah. I think it's frustrating for all involved.
Yeah.
We actually have another piece of news talking about frustrating for all involved. There's actually been a lot of news about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds this week, but the one that we're choosing to kind of highlight is the fact that the creator, Bluehole, has put loot crates into the game that you can purchase with real money. So they have started the microtransaction. So this is a thing that they had said that basically they would not do before the game came out of early access, because it is still buggy as hell.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you can't play more than like 4 or 5 matches without having to close the client and restart it because it has crazy memory leaks and it'll crash a computer. It's like half the time the lobbies don't even load. Like it is a very, very early access title. Super fun. I love it. But which I'm not even sure, actually, if we've talked about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds on the show yet.
I mean, we've certainly brought it up. I think we've after one game night we played, and I know it's something that both of us have dabbled with.
Right. Okay, then. We did play on a game night. I couldn't remember if it was a title we played on game night or not. So, okay, so we have, because I've still been playing ever since, and I do enjoy it. It's really fun. It's really fun with friends. I've played in, you know, duos as well as squads. It's really fun. But like I said, early access, buggy as shit. So they said that they wouldn't put any kind of microtransactions in because basically we've already paid them money. We've already purchased the game in order to get early access. So they were like, okay, we're not going to milk you guys and put microtransactions in. And then they turned around and put microtransactions in. So the community is really pissed about this. And so PlayerUnknown himself actually came out and said, you know, guys, I'm really sorry. We had crappy communication, blah, 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 blah. But I'm not sorry we put them in the game. I'm just like, that takes away your whole entire apology, dude.
Yeah, you can't apologize and then not apologize at the same time. And I mean, he does go on to say that it's like, it's testing, like he's testing the Steam marketplace to see how, like, I don't know. I think you can do that without, like, if you're just looking to test, you can do that without having paid loot boxes. Like, is there even a competitive, I know there is a competitive scene, there's a competitive scene for everything. You know, I'm looking at this, they're saying that it's 3 loot boxes, one of which is an invitational crate for Gamescom, which costs $250, and that's something a lot of these types of games use for supplying you know, a prize pool. You know, Dota does it, Heroes does it.
Smite does it too. Smite. And that is something that I can get behind. Like, we purchased Smite skins and loot boxes at previous points in time. And I think it might have actually, not skins and it was skins, not loot boxes though. It was the Odyssey items. So at least the first year, but I'm pretty sure every year, the Odyssey proceeds, at least portions of it, have gone towards the player pool for the Smite Pro League. I love that. I think that's great. That's creating a prize pool. And it ended up, Smite specifically had a prize pool. It was like, I think it was like 13 million or something. It was crazy, insanely big. It was like the third biggest prize pool ever. And it was all fan donated money. Like, it was crazy. Or like donated, like you purchase skins and then part of that. Anyways, you guys get it. So my point is, I love that model that you can kind of put your money where your fandom is, and you can say, I love watching Smite competitive esports, so I'm going to buy Smite things and increase that prize pool and create a demand for players, basically, versus just a money grab. And so, I don't know, we all know my feelings on loot crates and microtransactions in general. Not a fan.
The thing is, for this, it's like, these are completely cosmetic. They don't affect gameplay whatsoever. And I mean, They are optional.
Yeah, you don't, and that's basically his point, is, they're optional. It's like, yeah, but you said you wouldn't do it, now you're doing it, and that's kind of shitty.
Yeah, especially in early access, because I feel like early access is this agreement between developers and players, where at the start of the game it even says, this is a work in progress, we ask that you share feedback. I'm playing another early access game that I didn't really get much into, so I didn't want to go in depth, but... you know, Fortnite is one that came out and it's in early access. And
oh man, I haven't tried that yet. That was one that I was looking forward to.
Yeah, it's super free to play, and it does not shy away from the fact that it will try to sell you many, many things. There's daily login rewards. It's like free to play through the wazoo. Mm-hmm. But with this game here, with Battlegrounds, it's like there's this agreement in early access between you and the developers to say, like, hey, we want you to play this game early, and we want you to give us feedback. And if they're adding these little microtransaction things in before the game is done, it may make sense on paper, it may make sense in the creators' heads, it may make sense in a majority of the players' heads, but it still doesn't sit right with that initial agreement, which is, this is a work in progress, we want to develop this game with you. That's why we're putting it up for sale now, so you can contribute. But I feel like doing this is kind of... it's
super skeezy, because okay, well, so here's my problem with it. Mm-hmm. Is like, not only has everyone already given them their money for early access and everything else and the ability to play their janky ass broken game half the time, it's that there is so much in the game that needs fixing that I feel that I've already paid them to work on. Like, I've given them extra money so that they can continue developing this game, and what they're choosing to focus on is putting microtransactions in. It's like, well, I would really rather you fix the memory leak or the crashing lobbies or, you know, the ridiculous sound pollution when you're in the very first, like, waiting screen. Like, there's just so many things that could be worked on that, and I know that there are probably a bunch of different people and a bunch of different teams, and it's not like there's just, you know, one software development guy. I'm aware of that. But I just feel like you hadn't spent my money on buying a microtransaction guy. I wish you'd spent my money on buying another programmer to work on something else. Mm-hmm. And like, once your game is more polished, then bring microtransactions in. But yeah, it just feels like a very unpolished product. And then this is another, like, please pay me opportunity. And I don't like that at all. Yeah. I will not be purchasing loot crates in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
And that's the best way to do it, is to vote with your dollars. So yeah, if you're upset but you still enjoy the game, you are sending a message by not purchasing these things. And that message is, we do not want this right now, or maybe not at all in the future. But there are going to be people out there. They're, you know, I think they're lovingly referred to as whales in the free-to-play organization. And they are folks who will drop thousands of dollars on these completely cosmetic things. I play a couple free-to-play games on, like, Fire Emblem Heroes. There are whales out there that will drop thousands of dollars on orbs to get whatever character they want. And me being a free-to-play person, yes, I run the risk of not getting characters I want, but that's what I do. Like, if I don't want
to
put them on,
that's part of a free-to-play game. Yeah,
exactly. And with this, it's just, I mean, I think the fact that it's not out of early access yet is this agreement that's broken, and the fact that you know, this green guy is, you know, coming up with these reasons. But it's the same thing as coming out with a multiplayer game and saying, hey, we're going to be big in esports. You know, it's like, I don't think you can do that. You kind of have to build a community and build a game around that community. And then if esports are there, you form that community. And I know there's esports forming around, you know, Battlegrounds, but I don't think you get to skip to the end. You don't start, you know, a company and suddenly make millions of dollars. You have to mm-hmm. build towards that. You don't start a webcomic and then suddenly say, like, I'm going to do one comic but also sell t-shirts. You know, it's you got to build towards it. And I think getting out of early access was the first step on a road to then supporting the game with these microtransactions. You know, I don't think anyone would be surprised that they would add this eventually, but the fact that they're doing it before a full launch just opens them up to really easy criticism that's very fair to make.
I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. We have a second patron ad this week from Simon, who says Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. You can join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. You can find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. So thank you guys again for supporting The Gamers Inn. You can do so at patreon.com/thegamersinn. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Nameove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, and the now returned Embrace the Spoilers. If you're a fan of Game of Thrones, check out me and Garrett spoiling the crap out of Season 7. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. If you'd like to email the show and let us know... What the heck did we talk about? If you're getting covered in ink in Splatoon 2, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com.
I shouldn't shake it like that. It looks really... It's bad.
It does. It looks really weird. Again, you can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
So pro.
Stay fresh.